You're listening to Radio Influence.
You know her from network radio, but now she's on the net and in your head. This is the Fabulous Sports Babe on Radio Influence.
Hey, it's me. It's the Babe Cast. That's what we're doing. It's tournament time. I know. I'm not really that interested until we get to tournament time. But now I'm like in teen heaven. But I have to tell you something. You better figure this out because CBS has got everything going on. One time last year, I think it was, it took me 15 minutes to find out where the hell these things were. So like the first one is coming up today, tomorrow. I guess it's coming up on Tuesday will be the first one. And that's like on True TV. Did you know that even belonged to CBS? And then there's a bunch of other ones that I can't even figure it out. But you better figure out what goes on because you have to figure it out. It's on True TV is there. ESPN is there. There's a million people looking. So you have to look and see where it's going to be because it's going to be crazy. But first of all, I don't want to say anything, but you know what? I can't help but love that I was down there this weekend in the, what is it called? Florida Gulf Coast. Is that what I call it? I got to be, you know what? A good portion of my life has been off and on in Florida. And I got to tell you something. I never even heard of Florida Gulf Coast anything till about 3 years ago, 4 years ago. Now, I do have a Dunk City t-shirt, and I am wearing it. I'll probably be wearing it all the time. But I like it. And you know what? I'm going on the line there, and I'm saying they're going to beat up on Florida State. And people will say, what are you talking about? I don't know, but I got my Dunk City t-shirt, and I don't want them to lose the first time. I like you, Florida State. You know that. But I just hope that they do well. They're not as good as they were, but they're okay. I don't mind that at all. We have a lot of things going on. I was kind of looking at the people that are doing, and everybody's taking Duke, and they're taking UCLA, and North Carolina, and Kansas, and all that. And I'm going, wait a minute, what about Arizona? No, I have not seen them, so don't yell at me. I haven't seen anything. But I know they're pretty damn good. So I thought if we have to take a look at that. And I love the fact that you see, and everybody's hot for Kansas. And you know what? Villanova, everybody thinks you're gonna, it's not going to happen. You know, I like you fine, but it ain't going to happen. That's all. But it's like Gonzaga. I love them a lot, but I can't ever see them sitting there on the four teams at the end of the year. I can't see them doing that at all. That's all right. I'm not going to care about the NIT. But it is kind of interesting that Boeheim has to go back to UNC Greensboro after he said, and I thought he made a good point, which he said, we're in like this big thing, this ACC thing forever. And it should have been in New York. And I kind of agree with it. And there's nothing wrong with UNC Charlotte. Where is it? Oh, it's Greensboro. That's where it is. And it's fine that it's there. It's just I understand what he said. Maybe it should be in New York, which I got that. But they're going to beat him up something fierce in the middle of that. Do I have any other things going on? Well, I'll tell you what we're going to do. It's that time of the year. I know it's basketball and everything, but we're going to talk a little bit. We're talking to Susan Waldman. She's been the broadcaster for the Yankees for an awfully long time. But we talked a lot about, I said to her, and I said, you know what? I only know, like, Gardner and Ellsbury. I mean, I don't know anybody on the Yankees anymore. And she was giving me all kinds of things, but we wanted to talk a little more about George and how much we really love George. He really was the biggest thing in the world. And that's just my thought. We'll talk a little bit about it and it'll be good. You'll be interested to talk about those people and listening to it. It's time to do it. We're going to talk to Susan Waldman. It's all happening on the Babecast. I have to be honest, I'm looking at the Yankees. I know Ellsbury and I know Gardner, and I don't know another soul on the Yankees anymore. I mean,
well, I'll tell you all about them. I'll tell you all about them.
Tell me everything I need to know about that division and everything.
Okay. All right.
All right. Go ahead. Now? Yeah, sure.
No. You asked me questions. This is still another, it's a retooling year, but they've got some incredible kids. They really do. And it's the first time in years. My brother tells me that John and I sound like we're shot out of a cannon on the air because they're so young and they're so good. And Matt Holliday is going to turn out to be the best pickup they've made in a very long time.
That would
so
be
I
great.
I can already see it. Yeah. It'd be fine. It's got to be better than it's been.
Well, you know, when I'm watching it, I think to myself, sometimes I go out there and I go, I don't know who any of these people are, but I was noticing the other day, I don't know if it was on the Yes Network, I think, but they were like talking about the good old days, and they were talking to kids that were like 12 years old, and they were talking, and there went Jeter, and there, you know, and there was Mariano, and there was, right. And I'm like, wait, is it that old? It is that old, isn't it?
Yeah, well, 1996 is now what, 21 years ago?
Yes.
That was the first one. And these kids aren't all going to develop at the same time because nobody does, and that group didn't either. But that catcher might be the real thing. I know the first baseman's the real thing, Greg Bird, and the catcher Gary Sanchez, who is came up and hit 20 home runs in a month and a half. He's the real thing, and they've got some kids. It's just going to take time. Their problem this year is their starting rotation. And they're going to hit, and they're going to have a back end of a bullpen that's going to be very good. And it'll depend on if Cece's knee holds up, if Tanaka's arm doesn't fall off, and if Pineda can get people out with two outs and runners on base, which he hasn't done in a long time. And they have two spots open. If they lose, they could be interesting if they can get any starting pitching at all, because they'll blow out that bullpen if they don't.
Well, what do you see in the rest of the things? I mean, it's just kind of the beginning of spring training and all that, but
right.
Still,
more weeks of spring training, which is terrifying, isn't it? Three more weeks of games that don't count.
Well, so what do you do when you're sitting there and you're looking at it and you're thinking, well, you know, you at least have seen what's going on there, but do we really put anything in Baltimore? Do we put anything in the Red Sox? Which, by the way, I spent a lot of time on the Cape last year and watched Red Sox the whole time, and then they just like rolled over for Cleveland, but I watched them a lot. So I don't really know Toronto and all that. What do you see far?
My guess is the Red Sox, unless David Price cannot pitch, the Red Sox should run away with it. Toronto's very good. Toronto got to where they were last year, not because of their hitting, but because of their pitching. And that's kind of weird for Toronto because it's really turned around. They are going to miss Encarnacion more than they realize, but picking up Kendry Morales is not the same. The Red Sox didn't roll over. There was another team on that field, and that team got to Game 7 of the World Series. And if it hadn't won, if it hadn't rained, they probably would have won it. So it's not that they rolled over at all. Cleveland is very good.
Yes.
They're just quiet about it. They've got as good a pitching as anybody, and Andrew Miller has turned them around, and they hit and they run and they don't make errors, and they have probably the best manager in baseball with Terry Francona. So, you know, to say Boston rolled over is kind of unfair because there is another team on the field.
Well,
And they
happen to be better, and that's how I felt. You know, I love Tito. I love what happened there. I was talking to somebody a couple of weeks ago, and he said, you know, I do the National League and all that, and he said, and then I saw when I saw Cleveland, I said, oh, this team is going to be incredible. And I said, they were, but we don't know about it because they haven't been so long and so in such a long time. Is that why?
Well, probably. Also, you know, they don't play in front of any fans because they don't sell tickets, and they're never on. They'll be on national games now, but Cleveland was never on national games. They're doing this on ratings. That's why the Yankees are always on Sunday night,
right.
even if they're awful, because people will watch the Yankees, but they're not going to turn on teams that they don't know on a Sunday evening until like later in the year. If it starts going badly for the other teams, then they put, you know, whomever on. But I just think they've been bad for so long that, and they got close Terry's first year there, got to that playoff game, the wild card game, and then they kind of rebuilt. They very quietly have rebuilt everybody. I mean, they got a shortstop who is as good as anybody in baseball in Francisco Lindor, but he does not get any, he gets no press because one, he's in Cleveland, and two, Carlos Correa is the poster boy of the new kind of shortstop, and he's with Houston, so he gets all the pub. But Lindor is spectacular. Jason Kipnis has always been great, and they picked up Encarnacion, and I think that's absolutely going to put them right over the top.
What do you think, when you're talking about shortstops, how does that compare with Jeter? Because it's really that long, and I can't believe it's been that long, but can you tell a difference in the shortstop today versus what Jeter was doing at the time?
Well, but don't forget, Jeter, of the three that came up together, Alex, Nomar, and Jeter, was number three. Jeter just ended up on a team that won all the time. Don't you remember? I'm sure you do. Those three shortstops came up together.
Yeah.
And I can still see the three of them on the cover of Sports Illustrated, whenever it was, 95. Oh, it had to be 96 or 97. So, but you can't compare. Carlos Correa is a better athlete than Jeter. He's young. He's still 22, I think. I don't even know if he's 22 yet. You can't compare. It's a different game, and I don't think it's fair, because when Jeter came up, there were no shifts. You didn't have to play second as well as short. You didn't have someone telling you when to stand, where to stand. You didn't have somebody telling you, you know, you have to go here. All the shortstops that come up now, they can all play any place all over the infield. The kids that that I'm seeing now here, for example, on the Yankees, the young kids that are coming up, their shortstops, they play second, they play third, they play the outfield, because the game has changed so much.
Mm-hmm.
That, and because every team carries 14 pitchers, that you have to have people that can play other positions. So that's it's hard to compare. And by the way, Derek Jeter was in this game for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
How do you compare somebody who just got here 5 minutes ago? It's not fair to either one of them.
You know, one of the things that I was going to ask you, what do we know about Alex and J-Lo? Anything you want to tell me here, just in case we break anything?
No, we're not going to break anything. I don't know. That's, you know, I don't keep tabs. I don't tweet. I'm not a Twitter or all those kinds of things. Whatever. I hope he's happy, whatever it is.
Let me ask you, what about this thing with enough of this throwing the balls, go to first base. We're not going to give you four balls anymore.
I think it's the dumbest thing I've ever heard, because I've never seen anything, as I said on the air many, many times since spring training started. So we're going to save 30 seconds once a week.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, I watched our young catcher, Gary Sanchez, miss a home run by about 3 inches on an intentional, supposedly an intentional walk, got a sacrifice fly out of it. It was last August or September. He missed a home run by 3 inches. And turned in to be, because the guy, you know, he was ready. It came close enough to the plate, and he stuck his bat out, and he hit it. I saw Johnny Bench go over the plate and hit a home run. I've seen a lot of people do that. But to say that you're going to fix the pace of the game by taking away intentional walks is ludicrous. Why don't we start with 800 pitching changes in the eighth inning? How about that? How about 900 catchers going back and forth, and the shortstop coming in and taking the rosin bag and throwing it down 30 times? That's what takes time, not once a week.
How did you feel about the Cubs and everything, and that whole like generation of people, a couple of generations that never saw it, and it was so fun.
Mm-hmm.
It was great to watch it, I thought.
It was. You know, you have to see. I love Joe Maddon. He's one of my very favorite people.
Yeah.
But I've known the general manager of the Indians since he was a little boy, because he's the son of the program director of WFAN.
Mm-hmm.
I've known Tito since he was at AA Birmingham when he was managing Michael Jordan, and I know that team. So I was happy for the people in Chicago. We understand what that is. Being from Boston, I remember a promise I made to my grandfather that wherever I was, because he was there when the Red Sox won the World Series in 1918, and my grandfather, before he died, made me promise that no matter where I was, and I was still in theater back then, said, well, no matter where I was, if they ever win the World Series, I have to get a bottle of Dom Perignon and have it with him, for him.
Yes.
And so I know that feeling. I know those people. And I saw the women with their pearls.
Yeah.
The 85-year-old women in the little Cubs uniforms and her pearls. That would have been my grandmother back then. They all wore their Cubs stuff, but she had her pearls on.
Right.
I thought that was amazing. I was really happy for them, but quite frankly, I was rooting for the other team.
Well, but
I can't help it.
But
I just, you know, when you know people, you just, you know, I don't root for teams anymore. I root for people. And I knew them so well, and I know Mike Napoli, and I was really rooting for them. I had hoped they could do it, because it would turn their team around too, and it would turn baseball around in Cleveland.
Well, and one of the things is, I hope now, as you said, because it's in Cleveland, hopefully they will see more of Cleveland now, because they've been very good ever since Tito took over there, I think.
Yeah, they really have, and they've got a really nice team, but they're not a glamour team. Yeah. And that's, you know, they're in a small market, and they're in a pretty good division, I guess. I think they're, like, at the top of it, but Kansas City, we'll find out about. White Sox are rebuilding. Twins aren't really good, so they should have no problem getting through the Central Division.
Have you now, do you see much of the National League at all? Because you're at spring training. Do you see any of that at all?
Oh, gosh, yeah. That's all we play. We play Philadelphia 90 times.
Yeah.
We play who's in Bradenton. We play the Pittsburgh a lot. Yeah, we play the Braves. Oh, we see them a lot, yeah.
Yeah, well, do you see, is it anybody that we're, you know, because I was talking the other day, but I was talking a lot about the Giants and the Dodgers and how mm-hmm. well that did. And I was just wondering what you had seen, because you stay in the American League. And I got to be honest, I mostly am in the American League. I don't stay up late enough to watch the Dodgers, or I'm doing something else.
Don't either.
I watch the American League, and I never watch it. And it's like, okay, now I have to see what's going on when playoffs come.
Well, yeah, exactly. And that's what happens also because we're on the East Coast. I listen to, when I'm driving home from the stadium, I have my satellite radio and I listen to whatever game is on from the coast. The Eastern Division of the National League is going to be a lot of fun. Because everybody's loaded. I mean, the Mets, Washington, that's going to be a great battle. Don't discount, if they find any kind of pitching, don't discount Miami with Don Mattingly there and that hitting. Philadelphia is going to be better, and Atlanta is going to be better. But as a Philly coach said to me, we're actually going to be a lot better but no one's going to notice because the Mets and Washington have gotten better. So that's going to be a fun division. I think the National League East is going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Well, I'm going to be fun. At least I can watch that because it's not way over on the other coast. You know, how do you, you've been doing this for a long time, shall we say that?
Yeah, that would be 31 years, yeah.
31 years that you've been doing that?
How, mm-hmm.
You know what? I was thinking about this and I was talking to my producer. I said, I'm going to just do this again because when FAN went on the air, you started mm-hmm. it at noon with George. Is that what happened there?
No. That when we changed from, it was 3 o'clock on July 1st, 1987. I didn't know George. I didn't know any of these people. This was my first job. I was the person on the air when we switched from WGN, which was the country station,
right.
which had the Mets. And we changed at 3 o'clock. They went off the air and I did the first update. Welcome to a new whatever I said. Who knows what I said? But whatever. And that's when that went on. And I was doing updates. It was very different then. They had brought in all these. My first host that I was sitting with was Jim Lampley. He was doing 3 to 6 because they brought in that guy from Cleveland, Pete Franklin,
yes.
to be in the afternoon. And he couldn't come or something. He had a heart attack. And so they brought in Jim Lampley and they did a week of different kinds of hosts. And I was doing updates in the afternoon. That's where I met John Sterling. John Sterling came in during the All-Star break and did a week of shows. That's when I first met him in 1987. Isn't that weird?
Well, and did he come in? Was he singing Broadway songs, I hope?
He did a talk show. And if you remember, I remember John Sterling doing talk shows on WMCA in New York. He was really good. He'd hang up on people. You think Mad Dog and Mike Francesa do stuff? John started this way back in the 70s and the 80s. He did this. And and he did a talk show. You know what I remember from that talk show, babe?
What?
For 3 hours. From 3 to 7, John Sterling stood up with, you know, the hand cupped on the ear, like Gary Owens in Laugh-In. And I was so mesmerized by how he could do for 4 hours standing up talking to fans with his hand cupped over his ear and talking to the micro. It was fascinating to watch. And then when I started covering the Knicks, there he was doing the Hawks, standing behind the bench, and he had to stand up in back of Mike Fratello so he could do the play-by-play, standing up. Cupping his ear and talking into a microphone for the whole basketball game. Fascinating to watch.
When did he decide to sit down?
I guess baseball, you kind of have to because it goes on for a lot longer. But he's great. It was fascinating. We've known each other a really long time now.
You know, because I wonder sometimes they said, you know, I think he went to do a weekend or something at ESPN before they were doing my show. And they said that when he left, he would see Bristol in the rear view of his car. That was the thing that he loved when he left Connecticut.
Mm, Yeah, Sal Marciano actually used that line too.
Oh, well, yeah. It was me that I was thinking about. So, you know, like, are you going to keep doing this, or do you like doing it? That's why you keep doing it. I mean, you could be doing a million other things now, but you still like doing it.
Well, you have to, you know what? You have to like it. And I know people think this sounds like crazy, and it's really a grind. It really is.
Oh, yeah.
It's every single day for 162 games. And if it's a day off, I'm either doing the laundry or taking my dogs to the vet or, you know, getting my hair done. And that's, or packing for another city. It's, once it starts, I call it the merry-go-round that you can't get off until it stops. And, you know, it's every single day. And people don't want to hear if you're, like in theater, they don't want to hear if you're tired or if you're sick or if you don't like somebody. They don't care. They want their ball game and they want you to be energetic and tell them what's going on. And it's great. But I think, like anything else, you have to love it or you wouldn't do it. You wouldn't get into the competition and the abuse that you can get, male or female, if you say something on the air that somebody doesn't like. It's very different now. We used to get letters. Now you get, you know, cyber-stalked.
Right.
It's very, very different. So you have to love it. How can you not love it if you spend 14 hours a day at either going to or being at a ballpark, any place in this country? So you really have to love it, and I do.
Yeah, because that's what I wonder. I mean, I would think, well, you could do this and that because you've been doing it for so long. But you know what I was thinking of? You didn't have a playoff last year, so what did you do when you're used to being in the playoffs?
I watched other people's playoffs. Except I was watching everybody. Usually I'm watching myself. I got very into, see, that's what I'm saying. When you've been in this business a really long time, I have friends on the American League team. John Gibbons is my friend. The announcer for the Texas Rangers is probably my best friend in baseball. Eric Nadell just went into the Hall of Fame a couple of years ago. So you have friends, so you root for these people. And so I text back and forth, for example, with Jerry Haworth, who's the broadcaster of Toronto. And, you know, what's he doing? Come on. You know, so that kind of thing is great. I have friends there. I've been in this business a really long time. And, you know, people root for you if you're in it and they're not. And I root for them. And that's how I spent my playoffs, watching somebody else and getting heartache when Cleveland lost to the Cubs. I was happy for the Cubs, but devastated for some of those kids on that team.
You know what, when you're talking about that, but you've been there for a long time, and I'm sure there are people that just can't stand you and John, you know, but the fact is you've been there for so long, you think after a while they'd get used to it.
Well, they do. You know what? But that doesn't bother me because it's all subjective. And by the way, if we didn't get ratings, we'd both have been gone a long time ago.
That's right.
So somebody's listening. Do you know what, babe? I get letters from people, and I've had people come up to me and said, my mom just died, and when she was in the hospital, I had to drive from New Jersey to the hospital up in Columbia to bring her the radio so that she could listen to you and John. All she wanted to do was listen to you and John. You make a difference in people's lives, and you know that being in radio as long as you have. And, you know, it's all subjective. You know, I like different announcers than other people do, and of course, I grew up in a place listening to Johnny Most. And I thought he was the most wonderful thing in the world. He was emotional. And what I loved about baseball growing up where I did and where you did, I could tell as soon as I turned on the radio what the score was.
Right.
Whether the Red Sox were winning or losing. And that's how I am. And if somebody doesn't like it, I'm really sorry. But they've got other options. But we're still here and we're not going anywhere. So I guess somebody likes us.
You know, I always had a couple of those things like you do about this person used to be with Cleveland, or they were a big fan of Cleveland, and my grandmother died and all that kind of stuff. We do feel that for every one of those, there's a million people that say we're going to kill you tomorrow, but it's okay.
I don't think I've done that. No, I don't think I've had that yet. I mean,
I get that all the time. I got that all the time.
You know what, babe? That's what this business is about. It means you're connecting on some level. And that's, I would rather, Howard Cosell always said, I wouldn't want to be in the middle. I either want people to love me or hate me.
Exactly.
And that's what it is. I mean, we get, we get all the time for the last 30 years. I have read one particular guy in New York who writes, and he's said it for 30 years. So I know that the three most polarizing people in New York sports, Mike Francesa, John Sterling, and Susan Waldman. And every single one of us is still here.
Yeah.
30 years. Man's been trying to get rid of me for 30 years. I'm still here.
Yeah, but it's good, though. And we're going into another 31 seasons now. 31
yeah,
seasons.
This is 31. Yeah.
We were talking about FAN and all that, but let me go back to that because you did something at 12 o'clock, and it's when George was in some kind of trouble, and then he came back. But you started at 12 o'clock at night because that's when you could talk to him.
That's when I could talk to him, and I flew down to Tampa, and we started at 9 o'clock, and we had chimes going, like what's the movie that Jack Benny was in, The Horn Blows at Midnight.
Oh.
And I had Rigetti on the air and Mattingly, and callers came in, and every Yankee was calling, Reggie, and everyone was calling, and at 12 o'clock, the chimes went, and we came back from break, and there was George. And I had flown down, and he had his driver time it from his house in Tampa to the studio, which I think was in St. Pete, and so that he would be there on time. And we did an hour. George talking to the fans and talking about what was going to happen now because George was back. Oh, it was a great time. We had a great time. They don't do that anymore. They don't spend the money to send someone to talk to somebody.
But it's not even that. It's such a different thing. Like, you need a George Steinbrenner. You've got all these people that, I mean, like, there are even a lot of people that run the when I look at the Red Sox, let alone what's going on with the Dodgers. You know what I mean?
Well, George was
the best.
Larger than life. There will never be another one. George was different from everyone because George was proactive, not reactive. I always say all the time that that George already would have found a way to get around all these rules that are driving all the teams crazy because
yeah.
He always did. And you know, George, frankly, is really responsible for me doing what I'm doing. He was always forward thinking, and I remember in 1988 he had said to me, Waldman, one of these days I'm going to make a statement about women in sports. You're it, and I hope you can take it. And that was before the death threats, and it was before all the stuff that was going on with me. And he was tremendous. He wanted to be the first. He wanted the Yankees to have to be the team that had a woman around and being on the air. And he used to – I love you. I got to tell you this story. You're going to love this. When I started doing television first at MSG and doing some games, George would put on a raincoat and a hat and, like, glasses, and he'd go sit in a bar like Runyon's or one of the sports bars, and, like, people didn't know it was George Steinbrenner, even though he had the hat on the – and he said, what do you think of that girl? And he told me that the answer was always the same, no matter where he was, that the guy would say, well, I don't like women in sports, but she's actually okay.
How great is that, huh?
Isn't that, yeah.
You know, when
I
was...
Imagine George Steinbrenner sitting in a bar with a hat on over his head, like a trench coat.
When I was doing something, I guess it was 4th of July, and of course we were working and all that, and he called the radio station when I was at ESPN, and he had some kind of ear infection, so he couldn't go up, he couldn't go in the plane, so he was at home in Tampa for a couple of days till his ear infection went away, and he called me up, and then he started calling all the time, you know, whenever he wanted to, and it was incredible. I loved talking with him. It was just great.
He was great, yeah. We had every Christmas, you know, they'd always give all the people celebrating Christmas off. So I always did 10 to 1 every Christmas day. And George, and I didn't know what to do. Or who's listening on Christmas? Well, everybody listened on Christmas because at 10 o'clock in the morning on every single Christmas, as long as I was doing talk shows at FAN, there was George Steinbrenner calling from his den in his pajamas, talking about what he was going to do for the day. He was one of a kind. I miss him dearly, and I miss him every single day.
And I think about him, too, and it was just, it was so good that we, you know, I've always been a Red Sox fan. You've been a Red Sox fan. But I was there at Bristol and in New York, And it was right at 96 when everything happened. And I couldn't help but be a Yankee fan. And yes, I've been a Red Sox fan, but you could not help but be a Yankee fan because of everything that took place in those 6 years.
Yeah, it was. The whole thing was amazing. The whole thing was amazing. And really, you don't, when you work in it, my big memory of 96, game six, if you look in the, you look at the Fox broadcast, the seventh inning, George had come to the back of the booth where I was working for FAN then, and I went up to say hello and all that. And he made me stand there. Because he didn't, when the game started, if I had left and gone back to my seat during the commercials, I could have done it. But because I was standing there and they started playing, he made me stand there till the end of the game. So in the in the ninth inning, when we actually won, you'll see, if you see this sports thing, there's me and my little short hair and George giving me a hug in 1996 in October as they won the World Series.
So. You're right. We won't see that kind of person again. No. I don't think.
No. Nope.
And it's just, I think it's the corporations of baseball and everything now.
Well, it's everything. It's a different world. It's just it's a very different world. I don't expect to see that. He came along at the right time. Now, not everything he did was right, you know. That was, you do have to admit that when he was suspended is when Buck Showalter and Gene Michael totally revamped the team and really started doing that. And George was not allowed to do anything. So he couldn't... you know, take Mariano Rivera and trade him to wherever, which he tried to do a couple of times, or trade Bernie Williams. Couldn't do any of that. So a lot of that, it all worked. And you know, it's too bad. It's a different time. It's not too bad. The world changes. Everything changes.
Let me ask you about Mariano. I once saw him, and he said that he was throwing the baseball, and then he started throwing this cutter, and people were saying, "What were you doing?" And then he just had the cutter, and that was it.
Mm-hmm. That's it. Yep. You could tell, like with Michael Jordan in basketball, he could tell you exactly what he was going to do and then go ahead and try and stop him.
And the fast, and
only
I used
time,
to, go ahead, go ahead.
The only time I ever saw a group, you know, familiarity breeds contempt. It really does. And there was a time when Mariano actually had to, because we faced the Red Sox so many times, that group, Trot Nixon and all those lefties, and
yeah.
Everybody was there. And they started moving back in the plate, moving back so that when the ball cut in on them, the lefties, they were there, so they couldn't miss it. So what they would do is back off the plate. And then Mariano, all of a sudden, a couple of times started to throw a sinker, which would go the other way against the lefties. And I remember Trot Nixon saying, "Ask your guy what the heck that was." and Mariano started laughing because eventually, you know, if you miss a little bit, you're right on it. But that was great. See, this is a whole thing. It all just worked, and it worked for a long time. And you know who doesn't get enough credit for those years? Joe Torre, who kept that group together and was he was almost like a Francona, a baseball lifer who seemed like he was very laissez-faire, but really wasn't. But everybody, Andy Pettit once said to me after I asked him, "Did you get nervous out there? Something went wrong, a bases loaded or something." I said, "Weren't you nervous?" And he said, "No, I looked down at Mr. Torre." They all called him Mr. Torre. I looked down at Mr. Torre, and he was just sitting there. So if he wasn't nervous, why should I be?
That's an even better one like that. I love that. You know, I love talking with you. We could talk forever, but I know you have baseball to do. So I do appreciate that you came time for me today because it's hard to get in touch with you. And I really appreciate it, Susan. Thank you so much.
Anytime. Thank you. Great to talk to you, babe.
I've known Susan Waldman for a long time, and it's been really great, I have to tell you, and to be able to talk about George and Mariano and Jeter and all that stuff. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. We have things to do. I've got basketball, basketball, basketball. I'm going to be crazy, you know. I'm never going to let anybody, I just close the door, I don't let anybody in here, and I just watch. Can I like that Florida Gulf Coast? I kind of like them. Against Florida State, I don't care. I'm just going with them. Can I choose someone right now? I really think it's going to be Duke. No, I don't. I think it's going to be UCLA. Well, not really, because they don't play defense. And you know what? Arizona, I got to find out. I don't know anything, but I have a feeling they've been going a long way. That's why we love the tournament. That's why it's March Madness. I happen to be the fabulous sports babe.
If you know the babe at all, you'll know the show never ends. Follow her on Twitter at RealSportsBabe and subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. This has been the Fabulous Sports Babe on Radio Influence.
Chef Brian Duffy here. I've got a new show called Duffified Live that's unlike anything you've ever heard. Each week, I'm going to be talking to some of my friends, some people I've never even met before. We're going to be talking about people that I meet on the road through some of my experiences. We're talking about restaurants, talking about great stories, great guests, wild adventures, the whole nine yards. Get Duffified Live with me, Chef Brian Duffy, each week on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.